Greg Williams is back with the Titans as their defensive assistant, really the number one assistant to head coach Mike Munchak. And Greg Williams, a former Bills head coach, of course, serving that suspension from the National Football League for his involvement in the New Orleans Saints bounty scandal. It was an indefinite suspension. It turned out to be a one-year suspension. He was granted permission by the league to return to the National Football League, and he returns with the Tennessee Titans. We're going to talk with David Clymer, who is a sports columnist for the Tennessean, the Nashville, Tennessee newspaper. We'll talk about Greg Williams' return to the National Football League coming up tonight in the 8 o'clock hour. Also tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about the draft. We'll have some more comments from Mel Kiper Jr., the ESPN draft analyst. There was a conference call with Mel Kiper this week, and we'll hear what he has to say about some of the prospects in this year's NFL draft class. And we're going to get thoughts from you. And this thought occurred to me today. You know the news of the day, and we'll get to it in a second in detail. But Terrence McGee, released today by the Buffalo Bills, a 10-year veteran cornerback who had just battled valiantly over the last few years to get himself healthy and get himself into the lineup on a regular basis, and just couldn't do it. Went on injured reserve last November, ending his season with the Bills prematurely, and then today his tenure with the Bills comes to an end when they released him. Terrence McGee, the third veteran from the Bills defense, released just this week. On Monday, just 3 days ago, George Wilson released along with Nick Barnett. Three veterans on the Bills defense released over the last 4 days, really. It's pretty amazing, and it got me thinking about the nature of the NFL these days and the fact that experience counts for very little in the National Football League. I mean, these are not older players, each about 32 years of age, McGee and George Wilson and Nick Barnett. But they're not, you know, they're not senior citizens in NFL terms, but they're experienced players, all of them in their ninth and tenth years in the league. And, you know, the NFL, they just move on. They move on. The effort to get younger, faster. Experience counts for very little, I think, in the league. And it occurred to me when you think about the quarterbacks and the explosion of rookie quarterbacks, obviously a rare event last year with Andrew Luck and RG3 getting to start, and then the others too, including Russell Wilson, Colin Kaepernick in his second year. All of them, those four anyway, leading their teams to outstanding seasons, all four of them leading their teams to the playoffs, four rookie quarterbacks taking their teams to the playoffs. What happened to the days when quarterbacks would sit on the sidelines and watch and learn and figure it out? Those days are gone in the NFL now. Experience counts for very little. I mean, can you imagine even 10 years ago, a guy making his 10th ever NFL start, and that his 10th start would be in the Super Bowl? That's where Colin Kaepernick was a week and a half ago. His 10th start in the league in the Super Bowl. It just wouldn't happen. I mean, Dan Marino obviously took his team to the Super Bowl as a rookie, but I just think it's pretty amazing how the league has changed. Everybody wants younger. Everybody, because of the cap, wants a little bit cheaper. Everybody wants, fresher legs out there. And I'm not sure if it's to the benefit of the game when it comes to when you start analyzing whether it's good for the game or not. But it is the way it is in the National Football League. It's, I think, particularly a strong trend this year for the Buffalo Bills in this offseason with a brand-new coaching staff here. Obviously, a brand-new coaching staff is going to want its own people. They're going to want their own guys here and, put together the type of roster they want. And that makes it a little bit, the roster churn a little bit more pronounced. But it is striking this week with three veteran defenders, all of them, released by the Buffalo Bills this week. And we want to know what you think about that. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Where is the value of experience in the NFL anymore? Is there any value at all in experience in the NFL? If there is, at what position does experience matter? I mean, what are we talking about now? Is it a sink or swim league? You know what I mean? Do you just plug a rookie in, see if he can play? If he can, he's gone. We'll get another rookie 2 years away. Give us a call. Let us know what you think of that. If you have thoughts on that, 803-0550, the number, toll free, 1-888-550-2550. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. But where is the value of experience in the National Football League? What are we talking about now? Is it just a sink or swim league? Just throw the rookies in as soon as you get them, see if they can play, and if they can't, move on? And at what position does experience matter anymore? Think about it. George Wilson, 7 years, 92 games played for the Bills, 55 starts, and he was around a couple more years on the practice squad as he made that transition from receiver to safety. Nick Barnett, 10 years in the league. The last two of the Bills, 139 games in the league, 139 starts. And today, Terrence McGee released by the Bills, 10 years, 122 games played, 91 starts. He obviously had some injury issues as well. So, you know, it's not just a cut and dry, but still, three veteran players in the last few days released by the Buffalo Bills with a total of 27 years of NFL experience, a total of 353 games played in the NFL, released in 1 week by this Bills franchise. Just what do you think of that? Where's the value of experience in the league this year, anymore these days? Is it a sink or swim league? And at what position does experience matter? 803-0550, the number to call, toll free, 1-888-550-2550. We should start with the news of the day, though, as the new broom continues to sweep clean here at One Bills Drive. The team parting ways with veteran Terrence McGee today, former fourth-round pick in 2003. He, along with Ryan Lindell and Chris Kelce, those three, the three longest-tenured Buffalo Bills on last year's roster. Buddy Nix talked about Terrence McGee and his 10 years of service in a statement released today. Nix quoted as saying, "Terrence has been a contributor to the organization for 10 years. We thank him for his efforts on the field and off. We wish him the best of luck in the future." Rough year last year for Terrence McGee as he tried to battle back from knee surgery. Managed to get in seven games, but went on injured reserve November 6th. And he really battled injuries for the last three seasons. Played in just nine games in 2010, six games in 2011, and then seven games this past year. Overall, his career, 17 career interceptions for Terrence McGee, which is 15th overall in franchise history. He went to the Pro Bowl in his second year in the league, 2004. He was a sensational kick return man when he broke into the league. And in 2004, he averaged 26.3 yards per kickoff return, ran three kickoffs back for touchdowns. One, I mean, several stick with you. At Miami, the opening kickoff in a December game in 2004, a 104-yard kick return for a touchdown by McGee. That was the longest kick return in Bills history and the first time a Bills player ever returned a game-opening kickoff for a touchdown. And I also always remember 2005, the Christmas Eve game in Cincinnati, when he ran a kickoff back 99 yards for a touchdown and then later picked off a pass and kind of sealed the victory with a 46-yard interception return. Terrence McGee became the first player in NFL history that day to return a kickoff and an interception for touchdowns in a single game. Terrence McGee tied with Nate Clemens for most returned touchdowns in franchise history with seven, and one of only 13 NFL players with five or more kick return touchdowns. Terrence McGee released by the Buffalo Bills today. The Bills made a couple of additions to the roster today, including a quarterback, Aaron Korp. He was with the team last May and went to some of the OTAs last May as a rookie undrafted free agent. 6'3", 205-pounder from University of Richmond. A good college career there. Began his collegiate career at USC and then transferred to Richmond. Aaron Korp re-signed to the Buffalo Bills roster as a quarterback today. They also signed an offensive lineman, Hutch Eckerson. Eckerson entered the league as an undrafted free agent two seasons ago in San Diego, got cut just before the regular season began. He spent the 2012 training camp with the Saints, a product of South Carolina University, with 23 starts there. Hutch Eckerson signed to a contract by the Buffalo Bills today. That's the news from the Bills. Around the league, the Eagles signed quarterback Dennis Dixon to the roster, a two-year deal. Incentives built in that will become available if Dixon becomes a starter. Of course, Dixon played at the University of Oregon under new Eagles head coach Chip Kelly. He spent last season as a practice squad player on the Baltimore Ravens. It's been reported for a couple of weeks that Dixon was going to sign with Philadelphia, and he did today. He's played in four career NFL games, completed 59% of his passes, one touchdown, two interceptions. He's gone 2-1 as a starter. Many observers think the Eagles are setting up a three-way competition at quarterback between Dixon, Michael Vick, and Nick Foles. That could be interesting to watch, especially given the history that Dixon has with Chip Kelly, and especially given the history that Michael Vick has in the league. And, of course, Nick Foles played, you know, for the most part, pretty well for the Eagles last year. Speaking of quarterbacks, news on RG3. He is going to be back, they believe, for the opener this year for the Washington Redskins. And that was in doubt after reconstructive knee surgery at the end of his season. Robert Griffin III spent some time rehabbing in Washington. He had the surgery earlier on. And right now, the Redskins know there's a long way to go, but they think that what they've seen so far, it is within the realm of possibility that RG3 will be their starting quarterback in week one in 2013. Had the surgery last month to repair a torn ACL and LCL suffered in the wildcard playoff loss to Seattle. So good news for the Washington Redskins. Well, again, we want to get your thoughts on experience in the NFL. Is it? I mean, it's always been a young man's game, always been a young man's league. But are we at the extreme of that right now? When you think of the quarterbacks and the great play of the quarterbacks this past year, and when you just look at what's been shown the door here from the Buffalo Bills over the last 4 days, George Wilson, Nick Barnett, Terrence McGee, a combined 27 years of NFL experience, combined 285 career starts released by the Bills as they try to get younger, try to get better, obviously, try to make room under the cap, which is always a factor, and, you know, take the opportunity with a new coaching staff to turn the page. Give us a call. Let us know what you think of that or anything else about the Bills or the NFL. We're on the air till 9 tonight, 803-0550, the number, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Let's go with Carl in Clarence. Carl, good evening. Welcome. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Okay.
You make us proud, man. You're one of the best game callers in the league now. You learn from the best. And not only you, but the whole crew. Just the most knowledgeable, and it's really enjoyable to hear a game call from you guys.
Oh, Carl, that's awfully nice of you. It's been, you know, we're 6 weeks removed from the last game, and I miss doing the games, to tell you the truth. I really do miss doing games.
I believe it. Yeah. I believe it, because I can hear the passion in all you guys that call it. Anyways, I love Coach Marrone. This guy is not taking any prisoners. He sent in a message here.
Yeah, no question. And on defense especially, there's no question that they want to get their own type of players in here. And we can't discount the impact of the salary cap, Carl. I mean, all of these moves, George Wilson, Nick Barnett, Terrence McGee, all of them free up cap space, which they need if they're going to pursue, you know, if they're going to obviously re-sign Andy Levitre and try to keep Jarris Bird on the roster. So money is a factor as well.
Yeah. Well, no doubt about the money, Ben. But I think he's also sending a message to all the players, though. Look at whatever happened in the past, it's over. You guys are going to shine your shoes, and we're going to be disciplined here. And one more thing, it's just the opposite, I feel, for the Sabres. You know, they're making every excuse in the book. It's not enough. It's a problem. It's just because we hit the goalpost this time, and if we didn't take that penalty. It's just the opposite over there, and I think that's their problem.
Okay, well, we'll see how it plays out, Carl. I mean, obviously, you got to win, and the moves look great on paper now, you know, and the coaching staff is enthusiastic and eager to put its own plan in place. But the bottom line, you know, is what happens between September and New Year's and how you play in the field. But I appreciate your enthusiasm. Give us a call. Let us know what you think about experience. Does it matter at all in the NFL anymore? What is the value of experience? And what position, if any position, does experience matter anymore? 803-0550. The number, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Here's Ron in Hamburg. Hello, Ron. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I just wanted to mention, to me, with experience, what matters is good experience. If you've got a player that played bad for you or played bad overall, then they shouldn't be in the league. If you get a player like Jarris Bird or, you know, some others that have played well and had good experiences being a good player, that makes a difference.
Yeah.
I mean, Ed Reed and Ray Lewis and what they did for Baltimore, it mattered. Their experience mattered in their Super Bowl run. But if they were slacker players or bad players, then it didn't matter.
Now you bring up a good point, though. Especially,
I mean, I love Terrence McGee, but
yeah, everybody loves Terrence McGee. Everybody loves George Wilson.
He's injury prone. He hardly had an impact last year. You know.
But let me say this, Ron. I see what you're saying.
You know, I liked them all, but they just didn't perform.
You're right, and there haven't been a lot of winning going on around here lately. You're absolutely right about that, and the defense has underperformed the last few years, and that, I'm sure, makes it easier to release some of these veterans. But you did bring up something that struck me when you talk about the Baltimore Ravens, and we're talking about the value of experience and where is it valuable. Think about, for a second, think about Ray Lewis, who is obviously on, you know, the last ride in that Super Bowl run, Super Bowl win a week and a half ago. Ray Lewis obviously came back off the injury, came back for the playoffs, and I really thought not only did he not help the Ravens on the field that much, I thought he was a liability a lot in a couple of games, including the Super Bowl. I thought the Niners took advantage of Ray Lewis and his inability to run. He missed tackles. He was out of position. Obviously, at age 37, Ray Lewis was not the player he was a couple of years ago. But still, there had to be something that the Baltimore Ravens saw to put him on the field. Now, obviously, we're talking about a Hall of Famer here. And this may be where the experience comes in. the experience of having that legacy, the Ray Lewis performance legacy of playing and being an emotional player and an emotional leader, a rare player like Ray Lewis, I think that's when experience might count more than it ever does in any other time, in any other position. You know, George Wilson has those 9 or 7 years of playing experience. Terrence McGee, those 10 years of playing experience. Nick Barnett, 10 years of playing experience. None of them could really be mentioned fairly in the same breath as Ray Lewis. And so their contributions, their the experience contributions they can provide a team in terms of leadership and how to prepare for a game are probably minimized compared to a Ray Lewis. So as much of a liability Ray Lewis was on the field for the Baltimore Ravens this year, obviously there was much more outweighing that. But you do have to wonder what, you know, that's a rare case. And you brought it up, you know, Ray Lewis, Ed Reed. And Reed, I think, is a little bit more, you know, a little bit more serviceable, at least he was, for the Baltimore Ravens this year. But, you know, that brings me to the question again, what value is experience in the league and where is it valued? I mean, who cares if a guy has 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 years experience in the league, unless you're Ray Lewis? I don't know. I don't know if it matters. If you take the Hall of Famers out of it, you know, the Peyton Mannings, the Ray Lewis's, those sort of guys, the surefire Hall of Famers, probably doesn't matter much at all. It probably doesn't matter if you've got 7 or 8 or 9 years experience in the league. It's a production league. It's a league that favors the young. It's a league that, because of the cap, a league that favors the inexpensive player as opposed to the guy who's got 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 years in and the kind of cap hit he would be. And I don't know if it necessarily produces a better football game, but I think it certainly changes the dynamic. I mean, there's no way, again, going back to Kaepernick, there's no way 10, 15 years ago that a guy would be making his 10th NFL start in a Super Bowl game. That just would not happen. Teams would not roll the dice, they'd call it, with a rookie quarterback like that. I mean, it just doesn't, it didn't happen like that. Now it does. You know, and all those rookie quarterbacks in a rare year for young quarterbacks who got starts, and four of them took their teams to the playoffs and succeeded. Obviously, it was a rare year, but half of those guys wouldn't get a shot at playing, you know, 10 to 15 years ago, I don't think. Let us know what you think of that. 803-0550, the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, at John Murphy Show. And we're here till 9 o'clock tonight. Let's go to Cliff in North Tonawanda. Cliff, welcome. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hi, John. Good evening. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Oh, good. I was just wondering, you know, with getting rid of, you know, a lot of veterans here and stuff, but who is going to step up and be leadership-wise? I mean, I don't really know who that might be. If you would have any idea, who would, we're going to bring in somebody that's been in the league for quite some time, and they're going to step right in, and other guys might really not even want that or anything like that. But I don't know who we got on the roster right now that would be the rah-rah guy in the locker room, who would be anybody to get anybody motivated, or get, well, not motivated, but to rally them and to get them going. I thought that the guys that we got rid of were probably doing that or trying to do that, I would imagine. So.
Yeah, I think you make a good point there, Cliff, and trying to do that. And I guess if you're the brand new coaching staff in here, you walk in and say, you know, we can't afford to have those guys if all they're going to do is be rah-rah guys. And I think you're right. Those are three good leaders, especially when it comes to George Wilson and maybe to a certain extent, Nick Barnett. I know those young linebackers leaned on Nick Barnett's experience a lot. But that's not valued, and that really goes to the point I'm saying. That kind of experience is not valued anymore in the NFL in general, not just the Buffalo Bills. I think coaches and franchises expect leaders to emerge, younger leaders, and they're not willing to keep guys around in their 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th years if they're not performing and if their cap hit is too high. Now, to answer your question, Cliff, where does the leadership come from? There are leaders, obviously. I mean, on the defensive side of the ball for the Bill, Kyle Williams is an outstanding leader, and I think a lot of guys look to him for motivation and leadership. I think if they can keep Jarris Byrd on the roster, I think in his own quiet way he could be a leader on this roster in terms of a guy who is looked to as an excellent player, one of the best players in the league, really, and a guy who would lead by example when it comes to preparation and getting ready to play. On the offensive side of the ball, I think Ryan Fitzpatrick's been a tremendous leader for the offense in in his tenure here. I think on the offensive line, Eric Wood in particular has been a tremendous leader. So there are guys left on the roster. But when you're onto the kind of the kernel of the whole discussion point tonight, Cliff, when you talk about experience being shown the door, 27 total years of experience between Wilson, Barnett, and McGee this week, you do lose some of that leadership, and somebody's going to have to step into the void and fill the void. And we'll see. I mean, this roster right now, as we speak here on February 14th, this roster is in a state of flux. There should be no doubt about that. With the three moves this week, with free agency opening up in a couple of weeks, with the draft hard on the heels of free agency at the end of April, this roster is in the state of flux right now. And I don't know what the roster is going to look like in September. I don't know what it's going to look like when they go to camp in July, for that matter. But things are happening with this Bills roster right now. And right now the process is clear the decks, get rid. You know, say goodbye to the veterans who you don't have need for anymore, and maybe the guys with the outsized cap hits, and clear some cap room in order to sign the guys you really want, i.e. Andy Levitre and potentially Jarris Byrd. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk with a veteran leader from the Bills from their Super Bowl era, nose tackle Jeff Wright. We'll reconnect with him when we return. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive. And it's a Thursday night as we're going to take a look back into Bills history. It was all precipitated by a story on the Buffalo Bills website, buffalobills.com. Hannah Buehler does a regular Where Are They Now segment. And this week, her feature is on former Bills nose tackle Jeff Wright, a member of all four Super Bowl teams for the Bills in their glory run 20 years ago. Jeff Wright, former Bills nose tackle, on the line with us right now from his home in Tucson, Arizona. Jeff, good evening. Thanks a lot for being on the show with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Eighth round pick in 1988. And it turns out, Jeff, and you may or may not have known at the time, you were coming to a pretty good Buffalo Bills team when they selected you in the eighth round back then, weren't you?
Yeah, I didn't know how good of a team that they were putting together, but obviously, you know, they got Thurman and myself and Carlton Bailey and House Ballard on that, and we all made the team, so it seemed to work out pretty well for us.
Yeah, I would say, Jeff, when you came out of a smaller school, Central Missouri State, and they don't even have eight rounds in the draft now, it only goes to seven, did you come to camp, did you go to Fredonia figuring that you would make the team, or was that a question mark?
No, I knew as long as they gave me a chance to be on the football field, I could make the team.
And they gave you a chance, I would think, right off the bat, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, they gave me a chance, you know, to play in the preseason and stuff. And, you know, you just got to show up when you come into camp. You got to be able to produce some numbers, and that's what I did.
When you came to the Bills, they were playing 3-4, I believe, when you got here, and you were playing behind Fred Smirlis, who was a different style of nose tackle than you were, right? I mean, you guys really didn't play the same style of football, even though you were playing the same position, correct?
Yeah, he was more of a brawler type guy, and I was more of a shaker and mover. I ran a 4.67 when I came into the Bills. Of course, I wasn't as big as he was, but I was pretty strong, and I could move pretty quick, and it's a different type of nose tackle.
Pretty good talent on that defensive line, though, right? When you look on one side of you, it was probably Bruce Smith and guys like who? Leon Seals, maybe on the other side, later Phil Hansen?
That's correct. Yeah, Leon Seals.
What was it like playing with Bruce Smith to one side?
Well, you just never knew what Bruce was going to be doing, and neither did the coaches, you know? I mean, he was an awesome player, but sometimes he'd do his own thing. So it's like, you didn't want to get too far out of position, you know, or there'd be a big wide gap in there. But, I mean, he's an awesome player, and he's just a phenomenal guy.
When you were a rookie, 1988 season, the Bills made it all the way to the AFC Championship game at Cincinnati, lost that game to the Bengals. What did you think at that point, Jeff? Did you think, obviously a bitter defeat. Did you think there were greater days ahead for the franchise, or did you think that maybe, things weren't as good as they appeared to be earlier in the year?
Oh, no, you could tell that the Bills had some momentum with Jim Kelly at the helm, and you got Thurman playing, and we just knew we had something special with all the other people that were getting plugged into the team. We couldn't wait for the next season to come rolling around.
And the next season wasn't great either. Things sort of fell apart with some injuries and some internal issues. What do you recall about the 89 season and the so-called bickering Bills season here in Buffalo?
You know, I mean, every family bickers, you know. That's, you know, everybody made a big deal about that and stuff, but it wasn't that big of a deal. We knew we had a good team. We just didn't perform that well that year. You know, we had, like you said, we had some injuries and stuff, and we just had to make a few adjustments and then come back the next year. And obviously we did really well from then on.
Yeah, the Super Bowl run started the next year with, you know, playoff victories. I know one of the big playoff wins that propelled you into the Super Bowl was the 51-3 demolition over the Raiders on a snowy day in Orchard Park. What do you recall about that game, Jeff?
Oh, man, that was a crazy game. It was so cold. It was so windy. I remember John Kidd was kicking the football, and the ball would go probably, you know, 30 yards one way and go back 40 yards the other way. It was a crazy day. It was super cold. I remember that day pretty good.
There was a sense going into that game, I think the Raiders expected that they would win, and you guys sort of, it seemed, embraced the role of the underdogs in that game. Is that true?
Yeah, we always felt like we always knew if we were close, we could win.
And then the Super Bowl 25, when, you know, it's hard to, you know, look back on that game and think how close you guys came. Just talk about that game and the fact that, you know, the Giants played a lot of, you know, keep away almost. The Giants offense didn't let your high-powered offense on the field that much that day, right?
Yeah, that was the whole thing. They were doing ball control on us, and they were, you know, working the clock on us, and we were trying to get off the field, and, you know, we'd do some hurry up, and if it didn't work out, then we were back on the field. So, but, you know, it was one heck of a game. We just ran out of time. We just ran out of time.
Jeff, one of my favorite playoff games in that whole stretch came the following year, and it was the AFC Championship game against the Denver Broncos, played here at Ralph Wilson Stadium. What a tremendous defensive battle that was on both sides, and it took a pretty big play by Carlton Bailey and a couple of others to turn that game, right?
Well, if you remember right, I'm the one that tipped the ball.
Yes.
I read it was a screen pass.
Yes, that's right. I do remember that.
So I tipped the ball, and instead of me going for the ball, I let Carlton have it. He grabbed it, and we ran it in. He ran it in. We both ran it in. He ran the ball in, obviously, but he got the touchdown. That was the only score of the game. That was a hell of a game. I mean, the defense really came true for us that year. So.
And you couldn't. It's hard to believe that you could win a game by a 10-7 margin nowadays in the NFL. But that was as low as the score was. It really was a tremendous game to watch, and I'm sure to play in, right?
Yeah, it was an awesome game. It was. It was just one tight game the whole way, back and forth, and so pretty stringent on as far as ball control and field position.
And then the one more game from that string I wanted to ask you about, and everybody I'm sure asked you about, the big comeback game the following year against the Houston Oilers at Ralph Wilson Stadium. Was that maybe the most memorable game of your career, Jeff?
Yeah, it's probably one of them. Just because, you know, we couldn't believe that they were scoring on us like they were at first, you know, and we couldn't get any offense going, and we're just looking around at each other and going, what is going on here? We're looking up the fans. Some of the fans are starting to leave, and we go in at halftime, and we're all just sitting there. Whatever we do, we're not going to let them score again. You know, that was our mentality. You know, if we lose, we lose, but we're not going to let them beat us like this. So when we came back out, we just had a different attitude. And of course, Frank Reich, he just, started connecting with the receivers, and, you know, we got the momentum, and we changed that game around.
Yeah. You know, Jeff, that game 20 years old now, and it kind of lives on the NFL films. I don't know if you've seen it. Aren't you in that pretty prominently? You're like on the sideline screaming, "They don't want it," or something like that, when the comeback began. Do you know the scene I'm talking about?
Yeah, it was pandemonium.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what I was screaming. Yeah, you just tell that the fans were starting to filter back in. They were out in the parking lot, and they heard all the crowd going crazy and stuff, and the fans, you could see them coming back in the stadium. And, you know, it just gave us that extra edge, you know, that we'd always have that feeling that we could always come back. And we just ran with it.
Well, it was a tremendous moment 20 years ago. Jeff, your tenure here in Buffalo ended after the 94 season at the age of, what, 31 years old. Take me back to those days and why, the NFL came to an end for you then.
Well, because, you know, when I first came in the league, I remember seeing Tim Vogler on he was retired, and his knees were so bad. And I looked at myself and I said, when it's time to leave, I'm going to leave on my terms, not on you know, not because I'm all beat up and bad aware. So I decided, you know, my wife, well, she is my ex-wife. She asked me, she said, you know, if you go home and take care of the kids, and then I'll go back to work. And then, so we made an arrangement to do that. And so I made that decision not to go play for another team. And that's the way that was. But, you know, I'll never forget the good times that I've had at Buffalo. Love Buffalo.
Did you miss the game when you left at age 31, Jeff?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't watch football for another 3 or 4 years. I couldn't even look at it because, you know, it's hard walking away from it. Something that you enjoy and you love.
Yeah. What did you miss most?
Just the camaraderie of the guys and just the feeling being out on the field. And you daydream about it. Just, you know, it's something that you breathe in every day, and something I love doing. But, you know, I just didn't want to be one of those players that were so beat up. You know, luckily I came out with, you know, I don't have a lot of surgeries. My knees are fine. My shoulders are fine. I run 3 miles every morning.
Wow.
Still stay in shape. So, you know, a lot of guys don't do that. They'll stay in until they can't walk anymore, and later on in life, you know, that they're all beat up, and I wasn't going to do that.
Yeah. 19 years since your NFL and Bills career ended. What have you done in this time since then, Jeff? What have you been up to?
Well, I've been, I've been a lot of places. I've been to Tyler, Texas, lived there, and had a cattle ranch there. Well, not a cattle ranch, it's a gentleman's ranch and stuff. And then I had a restaurant for a little bit and didn't do too well on that deal. A few other ventures. And then, of course, then I moved down here to Tucson, and I've been out here on the cattle ranch for about 8 years. So that's basically what I've been doing, just living life.
Got to be hard work on the cattle ranch, right? What kind of work do you do there?
Do it all. We buy and sell cattle and haul cattle, and we vaccinate them and then process them and do everything that you have to do with cattle, keep up the fences, work on the wells, just maintain the fences. There's always something going on. Work on pump houses. It's just there's always something going on
Yeah.
every day.
Well, you couldn't pick a nicer place to live. Now, you're originally from California, right? And now you live in the Tucson area, really one of the most beautiful places in the country, right?
Yeah, I really love it. The mountains are beautiful.
Jeff, tell me about your favorite memory of the Buffalo Bills. Is there one thing that stands out as you look back over your 8 years here with the Bills?
Well, you know, that Super Bowl 25. When we played and the Rockets were flying above us, and I remember looking over at Leon and Bruce, and we were all sitting there right before the game started, and I was telling Leon, man, Leon, I can't even feel my legs because just the adrenaline was going through us so much. You know, that game meant a lot to us, and it was just one of those memorable moments that you'll never forget when the Jets flew over the stadium. And it's just like brought tears to everybody's eyes, and adrenaline was just gone. It was just one of those moments.
Great. Well, it's a great memory, and Jeff, and it's great to hear you're doing so well. Thank you very much for being on the air with us tonight. We'll catch up soon. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Jeff Wright, former Bills nose tackle, an eighth-round pick in 1988, who played in all four Super Bowl teams, and as he said now, living the good life out in Tucson, Arizona. You can read more at BuffaloBills.com. Hannah Buehler at BuffaloBills.com, part of her Where Are They Now series with a feature story on Jeff Wright, and that is up on the website right now. We're going to get back to phone calls when we return. We're talking about experience and what doesn't matter anymore in the NFL. The news today, of course, with Terrence McGee being released by the Bills, and just in the last 4 days, the Bills have released a total of 27 years of NFL experience. Not just Buffalo, everywhere around the NFL. Does experience matter anymore? Is it just a sink or swim league? You just throw guys in and see if they can play? And does experience matter at any position more than another position? Let us know what you think. The phone lines are open. 803-0550, the number toll free. You can call 1-888-550-2550. You can always follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. More to come. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550. Welcome back to John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Our thanks to Jeff Wright, former Bills nose tackle, for joining us on the air from his home in Tucson, Arizona, taking his time away from the cattle ranch. It's kind of cool, living on a cattle ranch, working on a cattle ranch. Jeff Wright talked about all, you know, fixing fences, just like you'd think they would do in a cattle ranch, you know, out riding fences. kind of romantic. Tucson's a great place. I can see why he likes living out there. But it's great to catch up with him. And there's more on Jeff Wright on our website, BuffaloBills.com. Hannah Buehler is part of her regular series of Where Are They Now? She's got a feature on Jeff Wright, the nose tackle during the Bills' Super Bowl run. We were talking earlier about leadership, about experience. News today that the Bills have let Terrence McGee go, the veteran cornerback, and his 10 years of experience. Nick Barnett, George Wilson released earlier this week. Barnett, a 10-year NFL veteran. Wilson, a 7-year NFL veteran. And it just kind of got me thinking about what value is there in experience in the NFL anymore? Not much, I guess. I mean, if it's not just the Bills, all over the league. I mean, rookie quarterbacks, second-year quarterbacks leading their teams to victory. The cap makes it, an interesting equation. It makes them their experience, I think, less valuable. We got into the leadership discussion a little bit earlier this hour. And if you'd like to weigh in on this, the phone lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can always follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. You can tweet in your comments about experience or leadership. We got a tweet from one listener, Peter Fiala, who says, "You must be joking. Just want to know, how can you possibly say Ryan Fitzpatrick is tremendous at anything? He never led a winning season in NFL." That's true. I said a few minutes ago, half hour ago, I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is a leader, a very good leader for this team. Have you ever seen Ryan Fitzpatrick run downfield in front of C.J. Spiller or Fred Jackson and sacrifice his body and throw a block? You don't think that resonates in the locker room as great leadership, as a guy who will sell out to help his team win? Have you ever seen Ryan Fitzpatrick stand in the pocket until the very last instant and absorb a blow from a pass rusher just to try to complete the pass? Now, believe me, we all know Fitzpatrick has limitations, and we can sit here and make an eight-hour show out of discussing and dissecting his game. But when it comes to leadership, I think he is A+. I totally disagree with that tweet. Leadership qualities. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is just about as good as you can get in the National Football League. But that's not the issue. The issue is experience. What value is there in experience in the NFL? Give us a call. We got a few minutes here. 803-0550, the number. Let's go to Jim in Niagara Falls. Hello, Jim. You're on the air.
John, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, actually, I got three questions to ask you. One, I hope that the Bills take care of Andy Levitre, because I know that I've seen him. He can play every position on the line, and he hasn't missed a game. Two, I'm worried about Nick Barnett. Did they let him go? Because he had the opportunity to show Shepard and Moats how to play, and he didn't get the chance to play in his natural position. And three, are they going to take care of Bird, and they're going to bring him back? John, Murph, thank you for the call. I'm going to hang up and listen. Thanks, brother.
Jim, thank you. Jim from Niagara Falls. Three good questions. I'll be honest, I don't know the answer, because these things are all in a state of flux right now. As we said, we're looking at a Bills roster that is in a total state of flux right now. But rest assured, these moves, today's release of McGee and Monday's release of Wilson and Barnett, freeing up the cap space, I think is indicative of the fact that they intend on getting Bird and Levitre on the roster under contract, whether it's in Bird's case through the franchise tag or in Levitre's case through an extended deal. They're clearing cap space to do something with it. You heard the soundbite from Buddy Nix, I think, yesterday on our show, talking about how they don't expect him to make a big splash in free agency. You know, I don't think the plan, and again, I haven't seen the plan. Nobody's briefed me on the offseason personnel plan. I have a sense that the offseason plan is not to go out and make big ticket, high money free agent signings in the next month or so. I have a sense the plan is Levitre, Bird, a few targeted additions via free agency. I think that's what they're looking at, and that's why you know, Wilson and Barnett and McGee, that cap space was cleared. You talked about Barnett, and I think that goes to the question on the table tonight about leadership, because I do know that when we sit down in this studio with Calvin Shepard, or you talk with Arthur Motes or Nigel Bradham, any of the young linebackers over the last year or two, they all point to Nick Barnett as a guy they look to for leadership and guidance, and that's gone, which, again, goes to the point of what I put on the table here tonight. How valuable is it anymore, leadership? I mean, how much is it valued? Apparently, not as much as many of us would think. I mean, it's more valuable to have cap space to get impact players and younger players, NFL teams younger than ever. All right, we're going to talk more about this issue. We're going to check in with the Tennessee Titans and, in particular, on our old pal Greg Williams, who is back in the NFL as a defensive assistant with the Titans. David Clymer, who covers Tennessee for the Tennessean newspaper in Nashville, will join us next hour here on the show. We're also going to get a preview of the NFL draft, some of the prospects from Mel Kiper. We'll ask you to weigh in on that as well. One more hour to go. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive. On the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's going to the house. He's doing it again. My man. Touchdown, Buffalo.
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO.
How did he do it? How did he do it?
I was sneaking in the door. Just sneaking in, had to part the door open, crawl underneath the crawl space.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Family owned and locally operated since 1933. At home, at work, and on the go, NOCO.
This crowd is absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
This, gentleman, is the Buffalo Bills' finest hour.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. On the official voice of the Buffalo Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550.
That never fails to get me. Deshard Choice. Can you cue that up somehow, Russ, and we can maybe listen to that again?
I was sneaking in the door. Just sneaking in, had to part the door open, crawl underneath the crawl space.
Cue it up, and I'll tell you when I'm ready for it. That's Deshard Choice, the Bills running back after the Jets game. And do you recall his touchdown in that? It's a forgettable game, the season finale. But Deshard Choice scored and then did this crazy dance in the end zone. And where there's a gaggle of reporters, myself and Mark Gaughan, around his locker right over here at the stadium after the game. And a couple of us said, what was that dance? What were you doing? And this is, you know, I can't remember. He kind of like, if you look back at it, if you have an opportunity, he does kind of open a door and sort of tiptoe. But here is Deshard Choice's explanation of his touchdown celebration dance after the Jets game.
I was sneaking in the door. Just sneaking in, had to part the door open, crawl underneath the crawl space.
And you heard the laughter. I mean, that was me and I think Mark Gaughan, and even I think Spiller was standing there, I mean, next to him. And just one of the funniest moments of the season. It was hilarious. That guy, I know there's a roster shakeup underway here. For comic relief alone, I'm hoping Deshard Choice is here next year.
I'm with you 100%.
He is a funny guy. There were several instances this year when his teammates literally be tears in their eyes laughing at stuff that Deshard Choice would say.
I remember when we were getting ready to go on the San Francisco Phoenix trip.
Yeah.
And I was on the bus with him on the way to the airport just listening to him pay his bills. I was hysterical. The whole team is just cracking up. He's a one-of-a-kind
Let's
character.
Let's get him on the show, right? Can we do that?
I like it.
We're going to get him on the show.
Let's do it.
I just want to talk to him. He cracks me up. I was climbing. What's he say? Do you have it again? I was sneaking in the back door and going in a crawl space.
I was sneaking in the door. Just sneaking in. Had to part the door open, crawl underneath the crawl space.
Hilarious. One of the funniest things. All right. We got an hour to go here. We're going to check in with the Nashville, the Tennessee Titans, David Clymer, who covers the team for the Tennessee in the newspaper in Nashville, columnist down there. We want to really find out what's the deal with Greg Williams as he returns to the NFL. We also have questions for David about some of the prospects coming out of the Tennessee Volunteers, including the quarterback Tyler Bray. We had a question about him last night, including the receivers that people are interested, Cordarrelle Patterson and Justin Hunter, two great receivers who could be first, second rounders. So we'll check with David Clymer, the Tennessean. We spent a lot of time in the first hour, along with talking with former Bills nose tackle Jeff Wright. I just can't get over that Deshard Choice. We spent a lot of time talking about the qualities of experience in the NFL, and is it valuable at all? With the news today, the Terrence McGee release, you probably heard the news by now. Terrence McGee, 10-year veteran, released by the Bills today. He was their fourth-round pick in 2003. Terrence McGee, who struggled through the year with knee issues, finally went on injured reserve November 6. He was a Pro Bowl performer in his second year in the league as a kick return specialist. But the injuries started to pile up, and Terrence McGee was released today by the Bills with a year or two left on his contract. The Bills also signed a couple of free agents, quarterback Aaron Korp, who was in one of their offseason programs last year, one of the OTAs last year, a quarterback who played at Richmond after beginning his college career at USC, and offensive lineman Hutch Eckerson, also signed to the roster today, the active roster. But that's not why they cut Terrence McGee, and that's not why they released George Wilson and Nick Barnett earlier this week. They're clearing cap space. They're, you know, we talked about this. Cap space is huge. They're trying to make room for Lavitre and Jarris Bird, I believe. That's not been stated, but I believe that. And that's why, you know, those moves are going on now as the roster begins to take shape, the roster in a state of flux. But it does strike me when you lose, when you cut, when you release three veterans with that kind of experience in the space of a few days, what value is there in experience in the NFL anymore? Is there any value at all? A combined 27 years of NFL experience between those three players, McGee, Wilson, and Barnett. A combined 285 NFL starts between those three players, McGee, Wilson, and Barnett. Is there any value to experience anymore in the NFL? I mean, do we just throw rookies in and say, let's see if you can swim? If not, we're going to find somebody else to replace you. Is there any position where experience matters? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. A tweet from LDeJesus0913. Experience brings a comfort level being on the field, but at the end of the day, it's all about talent. I agree. I agree. He says Barnett had talent. He did. He did have talent, maybe not exactly the kind of talent the Bills needed. And again, you can't discount the cap issues. There's money there. Kohout 40, experience is still huge. Look at what Ray Lewis did for his team, but I understand the cap space idea. Yeah. And we talked about Ray Lewis and the fact that, you know, there's a, you know, future Hall of Famer, which basically all Ray Lewis had to offer the Ravens. And I'm not saying it was insignificant, but all he had to offer the Ravens was his experience and his leadership. And they, you know, he's a future Hall of Famer. You know, they always, you know, there'll be accommodations made for guys who are going to the Hall of Fame. But that's really, he couldn't play that well. He didn't play well in the Super Bowl. All he had to offer the Ravens down the stretch was his experience and his leadership. And it meant a lot to them. They won the Super Bowl. They win. Give us a call. Let us know what you think of those ideas. Does experience matter at all in the NFL anymore? 803-0550, toll free, 1-888-550-2550. We're headed to the Combine next week. We're going to the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis, taking the show on the road, and we'll be there next Wednesday night with a live show, 7 to 9 p.m. from Indianapolis. Thursday, a week from tonight, we'll be there with a podcast. And then on Friday, another live show a week from tomorrow night from the NFL Combine in Indianapolis. Chris Brown is going from BuffaloBills.com. The whole crew's going down there, and we'll be providing complete Combine coverage at BuffaloBills.com along with the radio show and the podcast a couple of nights next week. Did you know that as a fan, you too could go watch the Combine workouts? Not everyone, but the league has set up a little contest. In fact, Bridgestone Tires is providing a contest. I just came across this today. Exclusive access to the 2013 Scouting Combine. You get, and I'm reading now from the Bridgestone press release, fans will get up close with a side of football usually reserved for coaches, scouts, and executives, and go behind closed doors at the Combine. An exclusive opportunity to watch the Combine. And the Combine, of course, next week in Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. You got to register, and you got to go to this website, and I'll read it out to you. One, the number one, IOTA.com. OneIOTA.com, OneIOTA.com. You got to register there, submit a request. The NFL wants to find the most passionate fans to go to the Combine. I don't think it's going to be a lot. In fact, it is 300 fans will be selected to attend the Combine next week. And when you register, they're going to want you to write a short essay in the comment box as to why you should be one of the lucky 300 to attend the Combine. I mean, if you got time next week and the inclination to go to Indy, and I know people are really, really into the draft and the Combine, you should go. You should look into this. The website, again, is one, the number one, IOTA, IOTA.com. Be ready to write a little essay in the comment box as to why you belong there, the NFL Combine. They say, provide them with interesting or unique information that will allow us to see that you are a real fan. You'll see the 40-yard dash for quarterbacks and wide receivers or offensive linemen and tight ends. You probably should pray that you don't watch the offensive linemen and tight ends run the 40. You'd rather watch quarterbacks and wideouts. And position skill drills. They say there'll be guest appearances from Marshall Faulk, Javon Kearse, Fred Taylor, and every fan will also have a chance to win some prizes. So, and we're going to be there next week. We'll have the media credentials. We don't even get to watch the workouts. If you are one of the 300 fans selected in this contest, you get to watch the workouts, the 40-yard dash and some other workouts at the Combine next week. 300 fans get the opportunity provided by Bridgestone and the NFL. And if you're looking for more information, you go to oneiota.com, oneiota.com. NFL.com. Pretty interesting stuff. Let's take a phone call. Let's go to Jeff in Jamestown. Jeff, welcome to the show.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Great.
Hey, I think you're wrong about Ray Lewis, though I don't want to, you know, sound like a party pooper, but Ray Lewis not only gave him the experience, but in the postseason, nobody made more tackles than Ray Lewis did. Out of every team, Ray Lewis led every team in tackles in the postseason.
Well, let's break that down for a second, though, Jeff. He played in four postseason games, right? They played in the wild card against Indy, so he played in more games than most. And he's a middle linebacker. He should get rack up tackle numbers.
Yeah, but there's a lot of middle linebackers out there playing.
Well, not many of them played four games in the postseason.
In the postseason.
Not many of them played four games.
At his age, still outplayed every middle linebacker then in the postseason.
No, not true. He got more tackles than every linebacker in the postseason. I don't think he outplayed. I don't think he outplayed Patrick Willis or Navarro Bowman in the postseason. You know, even though he played more games and racked up more tackles, I disagree. He did not outplay any very few other linebackers in the postseason. I don't think he had a good postseason at all.
Hello?
I'm still here. All right, Jeff. Thanks for calling. I disagree with you. 803-0550, the number to call if you'd like to talk about that. So the Combine next week, we will be there, and we'll be reporting on the Combine with radio shows live on Wednesday and Friday, and, of course, the podcast next Thursday. Mel Kiper, ESPN draft analyst, was already locked on to some of these prospects. More than 330 headed to the Combine next week in Indianapolis. The Bills' areas of needs, obviously, as spelled out by Buddy Nix, quarterback, linebacker, tight end, he mentioned the other day, and, of course, wide receivers. And Mel Kiper, in a conference call with NFL reporters yesterday, was asked about the crop of wide receivers available this year and those who will be at the Combine.
There's nobody that jumps out at you to be a top 10 to 15 pick except Cordarrelle Patterson from Tennessee, and that would be a bit of a stretch because he's raw. And he wasn't as dominant this year as I think he would have been with another year at Tennessee coming in from the JUCO route. Keenan Allen would have stayed healthy. I think he could have been maybe a top 15 pick. I still think he's a first-rounder out of Cal. I like Quentin Patton out of Louisiana Tech. I think the Vikings would be looking at him. Tavon Austin is a great slot receiver. I think you look at Aaron Dobson from Marshall as a kid. It's going to be very intriguing in the early to mid-second round. Marcus Wheaton from Oregon State would be a nice second-round option for somebody. Terrence Williams from Baylor is another kid that falls into that. Nick Stedman Bailey, West Virginia. Justin Hunter, Tennessee. All guys that figure in that same category. DeAndre Nuke Hopkins from Clemson. So as you can see, there's going to be a lot of wide receiver prospects that have ability taken off the board in that second through fifth round area in this draft.
Mel Kiper on the wide receivers in the draft. There doesn't appear to be a one big major standout wide receiver, but some interesting names. Cordarrelle Patterson of Tennessee has been linked in a lot of mock drafts to the Buffalo Bills at number eight. And as you heard Mel Kiper say, it's a bit of a stretch because he does have just the 1 year at UT, the 1 year at University of Tennessee, came out of junior college after a couple of years. And, you know, pretty good production, Cordarrelle Patterson last year with 46 catches, five of them for touchdowns. But most of his college time was spent at Hutchinson Junior College in Kansas. So it is a projection. It's a lot to think of a guy with that limited resume being drafted eighth overall. The other Tennessee wide receiver he mentioned, Justin Hunter, is a potential second rounder. There were a couple receivers that Kiper mentioned who we saw at the Senior Bowl, including Quentin Patton out of Louisiana Tech, I thought had a great week in Mobile, Aaron Dobson of Marshall as well. We're going to hear more about the Tennessee guys in a moment when we get on the phone line with our guest from the Tennessean. We'll talk with David Clymer about those two receivers, Hunter and Cordarrelle Patterson. But the quarterbacks are always on the minds of people, as not just Buffalo Bills fans, but most football fans, including Tyler Wilson, the Arkansas quarterback. Some have him as a potential late first rounder. Some think second or third round. Arkansas quarterback, we've done a number of features on him based on the Senior Bowl in Mobile a couple of weeks ago, and Mel Kiper in the conference call yesterday talked about Arkansas quarterback Tyler Wilson.
Wilson right now is solidly, I think, the fourth quarterback to come off the board, maybe the third. I think some people had a very high opinion. In fact, I know they did going into this year. This year, obviously, circumstances beyond his control. You always have injuries that play a part, but other circumstances, you all know what they are. They're well documented. And, of course, also three wide receivers moved on as well via graduation. Hamilton was the only one came back, along with Gregg, the tight end, and he was hurt. So it just didn't fall into place. A lot of things happened that prevented Wilson from having the year expected. I think he's a early to mid 2, at worst an early 3. So early 2 to early 3 right now is the range. Some think late 1st. I don't see it right now.
Mel Kiper. Now, let's talk about the quarterbacks. And Mel Kiper, in his comments yesterday talking about quarterbacks, he essentially said that he does not have any quarterback in his top 25. Geno Smith would be his top quarterback off the board if the draft were held today, the West Virginia quarterback. And Kiper expanded on his thoughts about the quarterback class of 2013.
Matt Barkley is a guy I think goes late 1st, early 2nd. Geno Smith, West Virginia, some think top 10. And it's possible. I just think he's going to go 20 to 32. We'll see how that all happens, you know, moves along as we go through, you know, pro days and combines and all the things that are important now until April. Mike Glennon from NC State, I thought could be in the mid-first round range. He didn't play great against Vanderbilt in the Music City Bowl, didn't have a lights-out Senior Bowl week, but he's got talent, he's got ability, and he also had probably the weakest supporting cast of any quarterback that we're evaluating here in terms of drop balls against him by his receivers were more than any other quarterback. So Glennon, to me, is a guy who could still emerge maybe late 1, early 2. Wilson, we talked about. Tyler Bray from Tennessee, I think, needed another year but comes out early after an inconsistent season. I think you're looking at maybe 2nd round for him. So there's a mixed bag after that of guys that think something could be 3rd round picks, something could be 5th round picks. But those are your guys I think are going to go within the first 2 rounds.
Interesting things from Mel Kiper about those quarterbacks. And the thing that I found it interesting that he said about Mike Glennon, I liked Mike Glennon, and I might have been in the minority. I liked what I saw of Mike Glennon at the Senior Bowl. He's big, he's immobile, he's kind of gangly, but he's got a cannon. He's got a good, strong arm, and I liked some of the stuff I saw down there at the Senior Bowl. One of the quarterbacks Kiper did not mention, but I thought about him when Kiper was talking about guys who are going to be part of that mixed bag, Zach Dysart of the University of Miami. He actually is in trouble now as far as the combine. He is not going to throw in the combine because he suffered a slight tear to his right hamstring this Monday, a couple of days ago. Happened when he was training at the IMG Academy in Bradenton. He's been training down there along with Geno Smith and Tyler Wilson. He was considered all along as a mid-round prospect in the draft, expected to go maybe in the 4th, maybe the 3rd. But he's hoping now to be ready to throw during Miami's pro day on March 21st. He was the top quarterback in the Mid-American Conference this year. But Zach Dysart, a setback with a slight tear in his right hamstring earlier this week. So ranking the top quarterbacks, how do they look as a group? Mel Kiper, in a conference call with reporters this week, was asked, why is it so tough to rank the quarterbacks this year, and will the picture clear up by draft day?
It's just because of the way the quarterback position went. Last year was an easy evaluation. Automatically, you put Andrew Luck and RG3 up there, and you said, okay, let's see how the rest of the guys fall in line. If Barkley would have been in that draft, ironically, if you look back, I mean, think where he'd have gone. He would have gone 4th to Cleveland, maybe ahead of those other quarterbacks, and certainly Trent Richardson wouldn't have been a Brown. They traded up one spot to get him. History would have been rewritten completely. Then all of a sudden, he would have been ahead of Tannehill, and maybe been the 4th pick. So now all of a sudden you're looking at late 1st, early 2nd for him. So the year didn't go the way Barkley and the USC Trojans hoped. They started the year number 1 in August in the AP poll. He began the year number 1 on my big board. Well, you saw what happened with USC. They lost 4 games with Barkley at quarterback. Lost a couple more when he was hurt. Didn't have a signature win all year. So they dropped down the rankings from number 1. He dropped down the rankings from number 1. So it all kind of, he lost his left tackle, Matt Khalil, to the Vikings. He didn't have, obviously, other entities around him. The center Holmes was hurt in some games. That affected his ability because obviously collapsing the pocket was something the opposition was able to do with Holmes out. So it was a combination of factors that led to him not playing as well as he did last year, throwing more interceptions, not being as efficient, to obviously dealing with more pressure, which isn't something that mobility is not his forte. So that's why right now we're sitting there. Geno Smith started out great. Looked like after Barkley struggled, you could lock Geno Smith in. Well, then he has a disappointing second half of the season. Okay, so there's issues in terms of what type of great starting quarterback he can be. So issues with Barkley. Then you think about Glennon. Glennon was hot for a while, even though he had a subpar supporting cast. Then he didn't play great against Vanderbilt and didn't have a wow you over Senior Bowl week. Wilson, you think about the other quarterbacks we've talked about in this draft, and you go back to things not falling into place for Arkansas as a whole, and then that affected Tyler Wilson. So he looked like if the other guys struggled, Wilson could go. Well, he had 3 receivers move on, the coach, a lot of he had the injury, a lot of things affected him. So it was just like the wheels came off for all the quarterbacks at some point this year. Things just didn't fall right with these quarterbacks, allowing them to maximize their ability. That's why I think the teams right now are in the predicament they are, trying to figure this whole quarterback thing out and not overdraft or push a guy up when he's not deserving. I think, and then Todd McShay and I have talked about this, so when we've done various TV segments on ESPN or our podcast, which we started yesterday, I don't have any quarterback in my top 25. I don't think Todd does as well, or if he does, it's right around 25 with Geno Smith. So you're talking about the top 10 for guys not even in there, barely in our top 25, or not in it at all. So there you go. It's just a tough evaluation trying to figure out which quarterbacks in this draft, if any, will be great starting quarterbacks.
Mel Kiper from ESPN.com and ESPN. He was on a conference call with NFL reporters yesterday, and a long-winded kind of evaluation and overview of this year's quarterback class in 2013. And he's right about a number of things. It is vastly different than it was a year ago. A year ago, right now, this week, we all knew that Andrew Luck was going to go first round, probably going to go first overall, we knew by then, to Indianapolis. And we all knew that RG3 would be very close. I can't even remember. When did the Redskins make that trade? It was March, I think, right? To move up, Russ? Wasn't it March? We'll look back.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So we knew right then that RG3 was going to go right after Andrew Luck. You knew that the way it would fall. Totally different this year for a variety of reasons that Kiper documented. And to summarize what he said, you know, the wheels did come off for a lot of those quarterbacks with the way Tyler Wilson's season played out, with the way Mike Glennon's season played out, with Matt Barkley deciding to go back. I thought Kiper made a good point about how Barkley's decision to return to USC changed things dramatically around the league. No question Cleveland would have drafted Matt Barkley fourth overall last year. Then they don't get Brandon Whedon. Then they don't get Trent Richardson either, who's got a bright future in front of him. Totally different situation on the quarterbacks this year. As Kiper said, he doesn't have any quarterback in his top 25. He doesn't believe Todd McShay, his partner there at ESPN, does either. And he's got Geno Smith going. He's got Geno Smith rated number 25. Now, somebody going to reach up and take one of these quarterbacks before the top 25? I would say the chances are likely. I mean, going back to the Senior Bowl, Mike Mayock from NFL Network told us he looks for three, maybe four quarterbacks in the first round. Long way to go before the draft, folks. Still more than a couple of months. But we'll get it all teed up for you next week when we are at the Combine, the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. We've got live radio show next Wednesday. We've got the podcast next Thursday. And more live radio from Indy next Friday night right here on the John Murphy Show. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to talk more about some of those Tennessee prospects. We're going to talk about Greg Williams and how he fits in with the Tennessee Titans. David Clymer covers the Tennessee Titans and the UT Volunteers for the Tennessean, the Nashville newspaper. He'll be on the line with us when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550. Welcome back. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're at One Bills Drive and want to check in with another NFL franchise, the Tennessee Titans, who've made an interesting move this past week. On the line with us, the columnist for the Tennessean, the newspaper in Nashville, David Clymer. David, thank you very much for being on the air with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Glad to do it. Good to be with you guys.
It was just a week ago when the Titans made the announcement that Greg Williams, former Bills head coach, former Titans assistant coach, is coming back to the Tennessee Titans. How has that gone over in Nashville and around Tennessee, David?
Well, I think locally here it's been pretty well received because you have to, and I'm sure you guys know, the defense has been a big issue here over the last couple of years in particular. Last year was just horrible. So people here remember Greg Williams for the influence in some of the what we think of as glory years, the trip to the Super Bowl after the 99 season and a nice run right through there. So the sense locally and maybe even regionally at least is it certainly can't hurt. I'm sure the move has been critiqued elsewhere differently because of what Greg was involved in, and I understand that. It's a little bit of a roll of the dice, but you know, when you talk to Greg Williams and hear his view of what he's done over the last year and how he has changed and what he plans to do moving forward, I think he can give the guy a second chance.
David, this is my opinion. You don't have to agree with it, but I think Greg Williams paid a pretty steep price for his transgressions in the so-called Bounty Gate scandal. I think a one-year removal from the game is a pretty stiff price for him to pay. Do you agree?
I do, but it may have been the appropriate punishment. And I, not knowing all the absolute facts of the case, and I don't think any one of us really knows everything involved, if it had been any less, I'm not sure we would be in the situation we are right now, where he could be coming back into the into a job situation and be getting sort of a second chance. So, you know, it's interesting to talk to Greg and hear his view of what he did during the year and how it kind of recharged his batteries. He lost at least 30 pounds. I think it was even more. Looks like he's in better shape than he's probably been in 10 years. So I think he used the most of it, and we'll see what happens and what kind of influence he can have on the Titans defense.
You know, I watched that news conference last week, and you wrote about it, obviously. You wrote, David, that Greg Williams has said he's a changed man, but you also wrote that you hope he hasn't changed too much, correct?
Yeah, if you know anything about Greg and his approach to defense, and certainly you guys do, there's an edge there. There's an aggressiveness and a toughness, and you don't want to lose those rough edges. You still want to be sort of the kind of defense that gets the attention of the opposing coaching staff going into a game and plays a physical game start to finish. So, and I don't think you're going to see that part of it change for Greg. I think some of the language he uses, quite frankly, in practice and during games, I think he'll soften that a touch. He has vowed to do that. And certainly he knows he can't get involved in anything like the Bounty Gate situation. So that's going to come out. But if Greg Williams is coaching, I assume it's going to be Greg Williams coaching very, very aggressively.
You know, you've been around Greg Williams. I have as well during his Buffalo tenure. I maintain that it is that edge, that his desire, almost, I guess, almost pathological desire to push the envelope, to push it to the limit. That's what really, I believe, got him in trouble in New Orleans, don't you think?
It probably did, because I think when you constantly push the envelope and you're looking for that last little edge, when you get up to the ledge, you push it one step too far, and that's where things get totally out of control. He readily admits he's a competition-aholic. I think that's his term for it. So, yeah, he's a very driven guy. That I don't think that'll change, and he knows he made a mistake. I don't think it's lip service or anything to try to endear himself to the commissioner now for him to say that he got carried away, he went too far, he knows he did things that should not be done in the game of football, and he's turned over a new leaf and is ready for a fresh start.
You mentioned the physical transformation of Greg Williams. That was evident last week. He talked about reorganizing his life. He talked about a trip to Thailand during his year away from football. What do you know about that? What is different about Greg Williams? What was that trip to the Far East all about?
You know, I'm not going to pretend we spent a lot of time together. We did talk after the press conference. Mm-hmm. I did not get an opportunity to explore that with him. I think we'll do that moving forward as he settles into the job, and we'll have a little more access here in the coming weeks. I do know that he's a very thoughtful man. If you've dealt with Greg at all, you know he's always coming up with a new quote or comment from someone as motivation or for you to use as reflection. So I think that probably was a trip that he found some things within himself working with in an impoverished community in Thailand and visiting with people there. I look forward to sharing some of those. His sharing some of those experiences. It sounds like a fascinating story.
You know, he goes to the Titans where Jerry Gray is already in place as defensive coordinator. Of course, Greg's worked with Jerry Gray before, but how do you think those two will mesh, both of them, you know, defensive specialists in their own right?
It's hard for me, and they say, Mike Munchak, the head coach, said Jerry Gray will still be calling the plays, and I think that's probably what will happen. But it's simply, you don't bring Greg Williams in to be a consultant. You bring him in to break down opposing offenses, to analyze defensive personnel, and to figure out how the best way to utilize your players against a particular offense, how you can give yourself the advantage. It doesn't really matter, I think, who calls the defenses on Sunday, because the preparation is what is so important. When Greg was here before, a lot of what they did was call a basic alignment, and whether you're in one blitz or another. But then when you get to the line, when you see what personnel and what alignment the offense is in, then a lot of automatic calls kick in. That's going to be interesting to see if with a much younger defense than Greg Williams is used to coaching, if it's going to work as well as it has for him in the past when veteran players recognize the different fronts and different adjustments they had to make. So it's going to be a little bit of a chess match, but I think it's going to be Greg Williams' defense, regardless of who calls the plays on Sunday.
One more question about Greg Williams, David, and it's been portrayed by some as sort of a desperation move by Mike Munchak to bring Greg back to the Tennessee Titans. They certainly need to get better on defense, but do you view it as that?
I think that any move Munchak makes right through here has to be out of desperation. He knows next year is a make-good season for him. He has two more years left on the contract he signed when he became head coach, but it's pretty clear from what Bud Adams has said and from the mood out there at the facility that it's sort of playoffs or bust. Now, if they went 8-8 and had an injury here or there that prevented him from winning more games, maybe you cut him some slack there, but I think Mike Munchak knows he has to win to some reasonable level. So I think every coaching staff move he's made is a little bit of out of desperation, because frankly, these are the times that call for desperate moves.
Talking with David Clymer, he's a columnist for the Tennessean, the newspaper in Nashville, Tennessee. It's the John Murphy Show presented by NoCo. I do want to get your opinion on a couple of Tennessee volunteers who've been linked to the Bills, or at least are of interest to people following the draft coming up, David. And I want to start with the wide receiver, Cordarrelle Patterson, wide receiver who, in many mock drafts, people have him going to the Bills at number 8. What can you tell us about him, and does he merit the 8th overall selection, do you think?
I'm not sure a wide receiver that has only 1 year of real college experience merits that high a pick, but you're talking about a guy who's a little bit of a physical freak, a big wide receiver with terrific speed, just game-breaking speed and agility. He has good hands. He's very flexible, can play in the slot, can play outside. Used a lot on end arounds and gimmick plays at Tennessee last year. If Tennessee had been a better football team, I think Cordarrelle Patterson would have gotten much more attention nationally. Good kick returner on top of that. So his route running and reading of coverages and adjusting routes and all that is sort of at the ground floor. It has to get much, much better. But as far as raw talent, raw ability, and frankly, a guy that I think tries hard to please and appears to be coachable and wants to learn, I think he certainly has a lot of upside in the NFL. He physically, when he arrives in the NFL, will be one of those very top, 5% wide receivers, just in terms of actual physical ability. It's going to take a while for the rest of the game to catch up, though.
A lot of people like his wide-receiving teammate, Justin Hunter of the Vols. Some people think of him as a potential second-rounder. What do you know about him?
If you're looking for someone who can make a more immediate impact, I think Justin Hunter is that guy. A lanky wide receiver, came off a really bad ACL injury as a sophomore, put up nice numbers, really good numbers, I should say, as a junior last year, and then entered the draft. But I think it was clear he was a little bit timid and a little bit concerned about the knee. And again, played on a bad team that was so poor defensively, it overshadowed some of the things that were done on offense. But yeah, I think if I were picking between the two right now and I had to pick one receiver, it would be Hunter over Patterson, even though I think they're both potentially terrific NFL wideouts.
And there's awful lot of chatter about their quarterback, Tyler Bray, who is elected to come out this year. Why is he so controversial as a quarterback coming out in this draft? A big, strong-arm guy like that you think would be a lock in many places.
Has a $10 million arm and a considerably less valuable head, quite frankly. There's no question about the guy's arm. I think when he goes to the combine, he's going to really catch a lot of attention from people who might not have paid close attention at Tennessee. He can make all the throws. He's willing to put the ball into tight spaces, sometimes tries too hard to do that and throws into coverage, but he has the arm strength and the accuracy to do it. Frankly, had trouble adjusting to some defensive gimmicks that were put in front of him, made bad reads. The commitment to the game is a real issue there and a real question mark for a lot of teams. If he applies himself, he can be an NFL quarterback. If he just tries to get by on arm strength and natural talent, I don't think it's going to happen for him. He's, again, I think a lot depends on how he meets with teams at the combine, and beyond that, how he decides to apply himself once he does become an NFL player. I think the jury's out on a guy with great talent, but a whole lot of question marks.
A lot of people compare him to Jay Cutler. Is that an apt comparison?
I don't think Jay, coming out of college, had the questions about his commitment to the game. Mm-hmm. Jay's a different – now, I dealt with Jay at Vanderbilt. Jay's a different guy now.
Yeah.
And was coming out of college. But he's a much more hard-nosed, competitive guy than Tyler Bray has shown to this point. And, again, I think that question about commitment, putting in the study time, putting in the extra practice time and being a student of the game is the question Tyler Bray just has to answer.
Interesting stuff, David. Thank you for giving us a preview on them and talking with us about Greg Williams. We appreciate it.
Glad to do it. Thanks, guys.
David Clymer, columnist for the Tennessean in Nashville, Tennessee, talking about those three Tennessee Volunteers coming out of the draft this year and about Greg Williams' return to the NFL as the defensive assistant for the Tennessee Titans. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550. A couple of minutes left in the John Murphy Show here. Our thanks again to David Clymer. Some interesting things he had to say about Greg Williams in particular, I thought. And I think David Clymer and I've never met him. I think we're on the same page as far as Greg Williams and his future is concerned. I am very curious to see what the new, kinder, maybe kinder, gentler Greg Williams is all about. I am glad that he's back in the NFL. I think he paid a steep price for his involvement, his admitted involvement in the bounty scandal. But I'm glad he's back. I think he's a really, really good defensive coach and a very, very bright coach in the NFL, and glad that he's back in the league. We should reconnect with him one of these days. I want to remind you about the 15th annual Hunter's Day of Hope and Prayer for Children. We had Jim Kelly on the show last night talking about it. It's coming up this Saturday from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at the Bills Healthy Zone Fieldhouse. Absolutely free admission. They've got activities, entertainment, food, beverage for families and kids of all ages. Just show up at the Healthy Zone Fieldhouse Saturday afternoon at 1. Jim Kelly and Jill will be there. The 15th annual Hunter's Day of Hope and Prayer for Children. Here is Butch on the East Side. Butch, good evening. Welcome to the John Murphy Show.
Murph, thanks for taking my call. It's a pleasure to hear from the guys from Tennessee. But first, before I get started, I really want to thank the Buffalo Bills Alumni Association for coming out today at Veterans Hospital to come hang out with us guys. And we had a great time, and it was good to see Lupo Cohn and Booker Eggerson and just some of the great guys. And also, I thank UB and their head coach for coming out, too. Murph, secondly, I just really wanted to just touch base fires on when you had Mel Kiper when he was talking about the quarterbacks in the draft. And I'm still going to hold ground to the thing that the Buffalo Bills number 8 pick is very valuable to a team like St. Louis, who moved back last year when they traded with Washington RG3. And they do have 2 first-round picks there. But at the same time, Murph, if Geno Smith becomes up at that number 8 spot, I do like Mike Lennon, but I'd rather take Geno Smith. As much as I want Chance Womack as a guard, I still would take Geno Smith. Last but not least, Murph, when he was talking to a guy from Tennessee, and he was talking about Greg Williams, I just like to think my father always told me loyalty is very important. Jerry Gray was always loyal to Greg Williams, and even when Greg got the job, he thanked Jerry Gray also and Bud Adams. And I really believe that in the end, when it's all said and done, that Greg Williams will be the head coach of Tennessee Titans. Murph, thanks a lot for taking my call. Great show. Love you, man. And you take care of yourself.
Thanks, Butch. Yeah, you might be right. I was thinking of that myself, that Greg could wind up there as a head coach, you know, whether on an interim basis or not. I'm glad he's back in the league. I will say that. I think he's a pretty good coach. All right, I want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer tonight, TJ Luckman, our producer, the maestro, Russ Burton, Bill's director of broadcasting, Jeff Matthews, production assistance from Matt Height. Got the podcast tomorrow after 7 o'clock available at buffalobills.com/John Murphy Show. Make sure you tune in for that. We'll talk to you tomorrow night. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO.